We'll go to questions answers now. I'm sure we have some time for that. Very quickly, when you are presenting your question, try to speak in the mic so that we can make sure that the people on the webinar can hear as well. And quickly, just also say your name and the name of your organization, and try to keep it a little short so that we can accommodate as many people as possible. And also, we'll be alternating between our webinar audience and in-room audience. So I think we'll start with the in-room first. So if anybody has a comment.
That's what I get for being close to the guy. So thanks, everybody. That was really interesting. I appreciate all the presentations. This is Luke Boston from the Aga Khan Foundation. My question is about the data, and a sort of a specific question for Dina and then for all of you. One of the things Dina mentioned was that you had difficulty, or there wasn't any real hard data about market. You couldn't ask people to get what they were selling stuff for in like June of 2010. But was nobody tracking that information in 2010, and are we tracking it now? So that in 2020, when we need to do another 5-year retrospective, that data actually is available. And then that kind of leads into the broader question, which is, okay, so you guys have all talked about collecting a lot of data, but how is that being stored? How is it being shared? How is it being made useful, not just for IRC or Oxfam or CRS, but for when CRS needs IRC's data, or when some local government needs Oxfam's data, or however you want to use it? How is that kind of, how does that work?
I can, yeah, I'll respond first. That's a great question. And in Darfur, there is no shortage of information about, I mean, we've been doing food aid. The humanitarian community has been providing food aid for years, right? So there actually is quite a bit of secondary data. It's not exactly in that time period, but we're in the desk review phase now, right?
Yeah.
So we will have quite a bit of data. Not exactly in the time period that we're looking for, but we do have quite a bit of background data. Like WFP has a pretty comprehensive market assessment for both millet and sorghum already. And actually, that was a really interesting learning. No one likes doing desk reviews, right?
Yeah.
But we have to, I mean, this is sort of a necessary thing, and actually, this process was really useful in pointing that out, that we will get so much more information, and we will have to do actually a lot less field work if we can use that data. And it won't be exactly the time frame, so we're going to have to complement it anyway with some of this, recall data. But we are going to be using, hopefully, a significant amount of background data for that. In terms of sharing, that I think is not unique to this process, right? This is the PERMA question about sharing among organizations and sharing, especially I think between development actors and relief actors. For now, what's useful is that we had a number of different, we had some government people that were part of the process, a research group. There were five NGOs that were part of it. And we still have one more year of the program, which is sort of unique, I think, in that sense. So I'm hoping that that learning can continue to be shared. In terms of forums, it'll be, this is something we'll be sharing on the Markets in Crisis group, so everyone should join that. I'll stop there if you guys want to complement that, especially the second part about sharing among organizations, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we were also able to collect price data. We were able to get data on the numbers and types of different traders, on numbers of farmers. So, within that market chain, you can get a fair amount of quantitative data. I mean, again, some of those may change over a season. So, there's still some questions maybe in terms of translating those onto the map. And just to echo what Dina said, I mean, I think we'll do our best to at least get our reports with our analyses out there. I think raw data maybe is a different question, and I don't have a good answer for that, but yeah. Mine's not USAID
funded, so. Like, how do I get mine? I mean, Aga Khan doesn't work, and I imagine we did, and we wanted to do a desk review, we knew that.
Yeah, probably just ask for it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if anybody else has
We're compiling the, generally, all EMMA PCMMA reports should be compiled in two places, the EMMA website and the D group. However, usually the data is not included in there, but it should at least give you contact people. We don't yet have a system for compiling all of the data, but I mean, that would be a great long-term goal. I would also just say, the data that tends to be available right now, it tends to be more macro level. So, national level major markets. So we don't always get the sort of nuances of what's happening at small village level, which can be quite different and can have implications for the kind of response that you can do. We also, you know, as Dina mentioned, we're trying to focus more on trends. So I think that means you don't always have to get, you don't have to repeat the sort of extensive data collection that you do during one of these intensive market assessments. But technically in PCMMA, you should be developing a monitoring framework where you look at a few key indicators every 3 months, every 6 months, or whatever. And you should also go back in the post-crisis setting to test your predictions and to see if they were right. But it should be a fairly light monitoring requirement. Yeah.
I think I'll take a couple questions from the webinar now. So, Ashley?
Sure. We have about... Let's see, we have about 50 people online right now, and some good questions coming in. Everybody was really silent during the presentations, listening intently, and now the questions are flowing. So one clarification question that we had from Ranajit about the questions that are asked during pre-crisis mapping and then emergency mapping. Are they mostly the same? Do they differ, you know, just in general? And then I'm going to add one more question onto that with some participants asking about the applicability of the tool to some specific experiences. And so one experience was about rapid and more frequent crisis contacts, i.e. multiple flooding incidences in the same region. And then somebody asked specifically about the tool in the context of wild capture fish or other marine products. I'll stop now.
Okay, so the first question, sorry, just really quickly repeat the first question.
The first question was just a clarification question, yeah. Asking about the questions for the pre-crisis tool and the emergency tool.
So based on my experience, the questions are very much the same kinds of things. The only thing is you would be asking about the past. So you might say, you know, in 2010, what happened to prices? In 2010, what happened to volume? But other than that, the questions are by and large the same.
One thing that will be that is different from ours is that we're asking about trends. So we're not saying what's the volume last week, you know, or what is the quantity that you traded during this past week, but we're saying before the last drought versus right after the last drought, what were those differences? So if you can describe percent changes, and that's something that we're talking about, right? Like, can we do proportional tiling for people that are not as literate or numerate versus, you know, it's sort of PRA, basic PRA tools, but it is a slight difference in the Darfur case. Oh, and then the second one.
So context of multiple floods.
I think you could consider it in a couple of ways off the top of my head. I mean, you could just take one of those floods that is maybe typical of the, you know, a flood hazard, or you could try to look at it over a bit of a longer time period. If those floods are occurring really close together, I mean, you could kind of expand your period of analysis. That's what I'd say off the top of my head.
I mean, I think in the Philippines, actually, they did look at fish markets because, they were very much affected. Again, often, like, it's just about defining your market properly. I think in the end, they decided they were going to focus on fishing nets because that was the item that was most important for recovery rather than looking at what was happening to the fish themselves. Although you would end up capturing that during your assessment.
Great, thank you. Now we'll be in the room. So,
hi, good morning. I'm Chris Kagi from Devis. My question is focuses on some of these slower onset crises. As the crises mature, the markets generally degrade further and further and further. Some of those degradations are dependent on prior degradations. Others are independent. From what I've heard you discuss this morning, you're taking two points in time, pre-crisis, post-crisis. Are you doing any analyses at multiple points in a long, slow-onset crisis to take into account the evolution of the degradation and the and decoupling the dependent and independent variables there?
Take a crack. Because the crisis that we've decided upon, the one that we're sure about is in Darfur, is drought. And that's one of those, arguably, right? And they were looking at it. I think actually what you just said is probably a recommendation for me as I go back. What we had planned was looking at So that. Yeah, I will. Noted. What we had talked about was trying to look at, this is over the course of a year, so this wasn't a multiple year drought. This was sort of a missed rainy season. What we were talking about is when during that period are we going to be collecting data? When, what is our reference year? What is our reference moment? What we had talked about is right before the rain started again was really when the crisis was the most pronounced. You're right, though. There's a compounded effect, right? It's not just that May was terrible compared to April. That's not true. May was terrible compared to last May, right? So the way we ask the questions right now, the way it's planned, is the way we ask the questions will be like, what was the effect of the drought? What was the effect compared with the season before, in a qualitative way? And I'm hoping that that will capture some of that qualitatively. But I don't think we're going to really be able to decouple. There's sort of too many variables in that to be able to quantitatively decouple, but identify the causality of some of that. But I'm writing this down for for when we do that. I think it's sort of a learning in progress. You might have some. You guys were doing similar stuff.
Yeah. I think part of your question is also what we've been discussing with some of those challenges around that period of analysis, some of the seasonal evolution that would happen even during a slow onset crisis, a drought. In Ethiopia, we chose to look at a drought that was kind of bad, but not the worst in terms of the year that we looked at. It was more just as we were talking to people, just kind of to give an example, people were able to say, well, even over the course of this evolution, for this commodity, these were still available in the market. But, then they say things like, well, but, if you'd asked me about a really, really bad drought, happened back in this period of time, then, things were no longer available. And so we had to do this instead. So, it depends a little bit on how you... the specific hazard, because we're not just asking people generally about a drought, we're asking people about a very specific drought that happened. And so part of our own analysis and in figuring out, what reference period we wanted to use was are we more interested in something where it maybe gets really, really bad over time, or do we want something that maybe happens more frequently but isn't quite as bad? So you can do some element of controlling for that. And then, of course, that's all in the pre-crisis context. But, if there is actually a drought, then, you also want to be monitoring and looking at what happens in a market over the evolution of that actual event, right? So that would be a different approach, more of the actual kind of emergency aspect of it.
One more from the room, and then we'll go back to the webinar people for one final question.
Thank you so much for the presentation. My name is Vanessa, and I'm with the private...
Yeah, will you please make sure your mic's on?
So my question is mostly regarding the recommendations that you come up with after you do all the analysis, after you do all the... just very extensive. You had mentioned that you don't know if it's actually going to be useful for anyone, if anyone's going to implement it, especially with funding. A lot of factors come into play that now it's beyond you. But within your recommendations, are there any sustainable kind of advice that you can give to the people that affects all of this, the workers, the actual market, maybe doing a collaborative fund and having a huge storage that is watertight? Or what suggestions could you give that would make it sustainable and not dependent completely on public funding, which could be very volatile?
That's a good question. I don't think we have a complete answer to that. I would say a lot of the recommendations that we made in Pakistan were not really directed towards IRC. They were directed towards government at different levels. They were directed towards more development agencies, possibly private sector. And there were water filtration plants that were springing up privately around Pakistan. And we, one recommendation was that those were, they were a good thing. and that, they should be promoted and they should, government, whether through government policy or through private sector expansion. So I think, there's
there's room to make recommendations, but then we just need to make sure that those recommendations are reaching those audiences. So I think there's, as I mentioned, there's a lot more work to be done in terms of reaching out to sort of non-traditional audiences when we give our presentations. And we haven't totally done that yet. The people who listen to our results in Pakistan were mostly other humanitarians. So, you know, that's something we need to work on.
It's more of a macro.
I think there's both. I think there's both. I think it just depends on the context.
I mean, if you're thinking about sustainability in terms of, you know, more of this resilience aspect, you know, I mean, a lot of the recommendations do get at kind of longer term issues, if that makes sense. I mean, they're not relevant to just a limited point in time. I mean, just thinking about some of the recommendations that we made, you know, it's around like building capacity of the local meat processing factory, and that's because, you know, then in times of drought, you know, people will actually be able to sell the local factory will be able to purchase, you know, an adequate quantity of local animals. So if you look at something like that, I mean, you kind of, you know, work with the meat processing factory, and that's hopefully has a sustainable impact over time. Or looking at enhancing some of the soil and water conservation structures, there was one to introduce a new variety of maize into the region that would get a better price, but the seeds just simply aren't locally available. So those are things that, you know, I would see as kind of more, the idea is to get at more the long-term sustainable solution.
A final comment, if you are dependent on public funding also, I mean, I think these are great in terms of like the recommendations that can be made that are not dependent on it. But an interesting thing in the Darfur project is that it's a 3-year program, and this is something that's built in. So it's not like a 6-month emergency project. It's actually built into a resilience program. And that's something I think we are doing more of at CRS, and I think other NGOs are now, I think we should be looking to do more of this kind of a thing built into our longer-term programs as well.
One short last question from the webinar people.
I don't know how short this will be, but this is a question from Gina. And her question was, how are you integrating gender into the analysis, given that women are often more affected by disasters, that their roles and responsibilities increase post-crisis, and that they are primarily responsible for food security and water collection for their families, in addition to facing risks of gender-based violence post-crisis?
This is one of our specific learning objectives for this OFDA grant that we have, is to look at how we can better address gender. We haven't figured it out yet, but we've been doing some thinking on it. So, I mean, I think one of the criticisms of EMMA and other market assessment tools is that they have not adequately integrated these issues that are very, very important and very relevant. They give them some lip service. They say, oh, it's important to consider gender, blah, 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 and that is peppered throughout the document. But as far as I have seen, it hasn't really been applied in any very meaningful way in many assessments. We tried to do it sort of last minute in Pakistan, and it did not work at all. We had a team of 18 men who, you know, I was walking around being like, don't forget gender in your questionnaires. And, it didn't quite work. So in Niger, we're trying to be a little more thoughtful about it. And I think what we've discovered so far is, I mean, it needs to come from an understanding of the context. The risk is if you do it sort of last minute, you're going to find out information that you already know, such as, you know, women are responsible for food security, or women do a lot of the water collection, or, you know, things that are always very obvious. So you need to sort of challenge your team a little bit, but you have to direct them as well. So that has to be based on a knowledge of what gender dynamics are already at play, and then take it a step further. I think it can also, you can also address it by your choice of critical market system. So for example, in Niger, we're looking at livestock. We know that women are much more involved with small-scale livestock, like the shoats. So we're probably going to focus on that rather than on cattle, and see if we can come up with some interesting recommendations to sort of put them in a slightly more powerful position. And you also have these what they call key analytical questions that sort of guide your research throughout the market assessment. So if you have a particular question that is specifically about gender, And for example, what is the impact of floods on men and versus women in this particular critical market system? Then you're basically forcing your team to put those questions in a systematic way in the questionnaire and to actually address it in their analysis. So those are some thoughts, but I think there's a lot more to do.
Well, thank you so much. Before I let Laura make the concluding remarks, I'd quickly like to point out some housekeeping things. Thank you so much, Emily Sloan, Emily Farr, and Dina for the presentation and your thoughts today. Thank you so much for attending. For all those who have subscribed for this event, please look out for our email. In the next 2 weeks, we'll be giving you guys post-event resources, which will include this wonderful presentation along with some other material. So look out for that. And the people who are attending the event, please try to fill out the survey that were on your seats and pass them on to Angie, who was sitting outside. And another thing, our wonderful Microlinks Christian Oplanik person, she's in Uganda right now, and she asked me to tell you about this event tomorrow, which is a SEEP webinar in partnership with Leo Project and Beam Exchange on using systemic M&E tools in the Feed to Future Uganda. This will cover the context and objectives of the program, the theory of change used, the strategic approach applied, features of the tool, and how they combine tools to monitor structural changes in the access of Ugandan farmers to appropriate and affordable inputs. Yeah, that's a little complicated, but I'm sure you'd be interested. So register for it on the SEEP website. And also, Microlinks will be taking a hiatus for about 2 weeks, 2 months, and then we'll be back in September. So look out for our other events. And then with that, thank you so much again, and I'd like to ask Laura to concluding remarks.
Thank you so much, Usman. I'd just like to thank Emily and Dina once more, and thank all of you who've joined us in person or online. I think it's been terrific to hear the different lessons, especially from the different contexts, and as well your questions, which I think really helped to sort of challenge us and get further in our thinking. Some of the common themes that I saw coming up again and again is that this is a terrific way for us to build capacity. You heard it said that among the humanitarian community, building capacity to understand and analyze markets is still a really big challenge for us. And doing it immediately post-disaster is nigh on impossible. So I think this is a terrific chance for us. The importance of sharing our data, doing desk review, especially I think given with a tool like PCMMA, where the point isn't so much the data, you know, Emma has an entire page where we talk about appropriate imprecision and how it doesn't matter exactly what the numbers are, it matters what the trends are. And so how do we make sure that the data gets out there, not just for all you USAID-funded folks who have to do it, but to make sure that it has the context so that you're able to understand it and then use it yourselves. I think also the issue around reference points and baselines for those slow-onset crises, do we have multiple reference points? How are we going to manage that? Do we look at the worst of a crisis? What does that mean if we're also trying to have an early warning system and monitor? We don't want to set our trigger with when things are the absolute worst. That's not going to help us out either. And then finally, probably most importantly, is that, you know, when we conclude our assessment, that's really when our work starts in terms of making sure that this information gets into the right hands, whether this be host-country governments, the development actors, this is the local private sector and getting them to invest preparedness, maybe the other side of our own organizations, whatever that may be, making sure that these are really taken into consideration so that we can try and lessen the impact of that next crisis. I would like to close it out, and again, just thank you to everyone, to the Microlinks team, the audience, and of course our presenters. Thanks.